Welcome to Reshaping Workflows with Dell Pro Max PCs and NVIDIA, where innovation meets real-world impact in high-performance computing.
Hello, welcome back to another exciting episode of Reshaping Workflows with Dell Pro Max and NVIDIA RTX Pro GPUs. I'm your host, Logan Mahler. Today, we have a very special guest. You've probably seen from a partner standpoint, we talk about NVIDIA on this because it's very important into basically the software and the GPU ecosystem within our Dell Pro Max products. But today we have an industry expert, one of my favorite people to talk to at NVIDIA, Sean Young. But I won't steal his thunder. Sean, if you could, do a quick introduction, tell everyone a little bit about your role at NVIDIA and background, and then we'll jump right into the interview.
Yeah. Hi, everybody. And thanks, Logan. My name is Sean Young, and I lead AEC and geospatial go-to-market at NVIDIA. And I have a background in AEC, visualization, 3D, et cetera, and manufacturing as well for the last 25 years. And what's going on today is AI. It's all about AI. I'm looking forward to talking to you about that.
Awesome. Thank you, Sean. So if you've listened to any of our previous episodes, you know, Sama, who came on, Basama Bali from NVIDIA, she is on kind of Sean Young's industry team. So let's start it off kind of high level, and then we'll get down deeper as we go into the conversation, Sean. So you said you lead kind of AEC. I use the term ACO, but they're interchangeable and geospatial. Can you just set the context and kind of define what AEC is and geospatial is for the audience out there that maybe doesn't know?
Yeah, sure. Architecture, engineering, and construction industry. And that encompasses all the architecture services firms, engineering services firms, and general contractors, et cetera, building our built environment. And that includes buildings and infrastructure like airports and highways and dams and you name it. Geospatial is an integral part of that and extends beyond it. So geospatial is management of land resources, and includes all sorts of technology like Earth observation data coming from satellites and GIS. And the O part is operations, and that stands for asset or building operations. And that's what happens once the thing is built. So for example, if you have a stadium or airport, there's lots of technology deployed on a day-to-day basis to operate the building, or we use the term asset for things that are more civil engineering in nature, like a bridge.
As you can see, Sean's got a ton of expertise, you know, in AEC and all that kind of comes along with it. So thanks for defining that. Like in this show, we talk about accelerating workflows, and traditionally, we'll get into the AI piece later, but traditionally, a lot of people you've seen on this episodes is we talk about kind of an industry, and then let's say media and entertainment, and then an ISV, which is an independent software vendor, let's say Adobe or, you know, Houdini side effects. It doesn't matter. The list goes on and on. But that is really what Dell Pro Max and NVIDIA are really are accelerating those workflows within those traditional ISVs. So within AECO and geospatial, Sean, what are some of the major kind of ISVs and their functions within that industry? Like, I mean, I know there's tons, but maybe hit the top two or three.
All right. Well, first, let's go into the categories. Okay. So A is architecture. And so architects use software to do conceptual design and urban planning and the architectural design, which is called BIM, which is the latest kind of industry standard for the way you do architectural design and construction documentation. And then the engineering part, it's not mechanical engineering like in factories, although buildings are starting to get built in factories. It's called prefabrication. And those processes are more like traditional manufacturing processes. But the E traditionally stands for civil engineering and what's called MEP, which is mechanical in terms of HVAC, like the heating and cooling systems, the electrical, which supports all those things, and plumbing, which is an integral part of any building. And also data centers depend on water for cooling these days. So, and then there's construction, which is as it sounds. And now there's specialized software for each one of the A, the E, and the C. And there's also software, specialized software for the O, for operations. The software vendors are the ones everybody's probably heard of, like Bentley, Trimble, Autodesk, Hexagon, Nemetschek. And then there's special rendering software companies like Chaos Group and D5 and Unreal Engine, Epic Games, etc.
Okay, makes sense. So like in any industry, there's, you know, tons of different softwares. I mean, obviously they're all accelerated by NVIDIA. I think a good question to kind of stop and ask is, you know, in terms of, and we don't have to get into specific models of Dell Pro Max, but more on the NVIDIA side, are these kind of lower end on the GPU stack? Are we talking 1,500 Blackwell RTX Pros? Are we talking 6,000 Blackwell RTX Pros? Like, where does that kind of fit in the GPU stack for acceleration for those ISVs?
Well, there's a lot of it depends. At the most basic level, 3D software of any type, CAD or BIM, uses the GPU to power the viewport with DirectX or OpenGL. And that, depending on the complexity of the scene and the size of the display in terms of resolution, et cetera, you need a powerful GPU for that. But that's really kind of like table stakes. Every software application needs that. But that's not the best way to measure the capacity of the GPU that you need, because many of these software applications do compute on the GPU. People think about the CPU as the computer, as the place where computing gets done. But more and more, a lot of the computationally intensive processes are being offloaded to the GPU. Why? Because the GPU can accelerate those processes much better than the CPU. And the reason is because the GPU has thousands of cores, where the CPU only has a small number of cores. And those operations that can be parallelized, broken down into many small parts, perform much better on the GPU. And those operations can vary depending on the software application. Some software applications offload compute to the GPU for file I/O when you open or save a file. Some do some type of simulation that's mathematically intensive, and that can include like computational fluid dynamics, structural, etc. Some applications convert point cloud to mesh using the GPU, or align photogrammetry using the GPU. And of course, there's ray tracing. All the ray tracing applications benefit from the RTX stack that's included in the hardware of our GPU, but also in the software that we provide to software developers. Speaking of software developers, any of the tasks that I mentioned previously that benefit from the GPU benefit from a software layer that NVIDIA has called CUDA, which is available to every software developer to optimize and accelerate their software for our GPUs. And I haven't even got into AI. And of course, AI is going to run much better on the GPU compared to other methods like the CPU or the MPU for the type of work that folks in the AEC industry are doing.
So, I mean, you kind of teed up the next question perfectly, Sean. I mean, we all know that AI is kind of taking center stage. I mean, AI has been around a lot longer than people actually think, and goes back to many years to machine learning, neural networks. But in terms of commonplace, probably in the last 3 to 4 years, it's really taken off. So with AI kind of taking center stage now, not only from an app development, software development, AI dev, data science standpoint, but specifically with an AEC and geospatial, how is AI going to disrupt AEC and geospatial customers' workflows? Like, how are they changing and evolving with AI?
AI has the ability to learn. So it could watch the way we work and learn how we do it and why we're doing it, and automate those things that it can and should be automated, eliminating a lot of the mundane tediousness of the day-to-day workflows. So there's a ton of examples in AEC and geospatial. And now we're starting to see, which is something I've never seen before, and is this incredible propagation of AEC AI startup companies, because they recognize that across the workload, the A, the E, the C, and the O, there are thousands of different operations that can be optimized with AI. And you know what's interesting? We have all this software, and we've gone in AEC, we've gone from drawing blueprints on stone tablets to blueprints on paper to CAD to BIM, et cetera. But in a nutshell, the productivity in this industry has not improved despite this focus on technology. In other words, we haven't really leveraged the technology. And I believe from a productivity perspective, and I believe the reason is because it's still a very manual process. We're still drawing the geometry. even if we can generate the geometry computationally, there's still a ton of manual steps involved. And manual steps involved in each conversion process going from conceptual to BIM to construction documents, et cetera, down the line. And it creates all of these different steps and processes create tons of confusion, by the way, when it's time to build the thing on the construction site. So AI has the ability to optimize all of those things and automate many things that are just like hair pulling, repetitive, silly wastes of time that really eliminate the ability for folks, for practitioners to focus on iterating, applying their ingenuity to creativity, thinking about solutions and problems early in the design process, because they're all too busy just doing this manual work. I'm really excited about the future. And all of this, by the way, takes computational capability. There's two sides of AI. There's the AI work that all of these startups are doing, which is AI development and software development, and the AI that all the end users depend on to do their work, which is AI inference. And we could discuss, like, from a computational workstation requirements perspective, how they're very different.
Yeah, let's dive into that. Let's talk about, like, the traditional kind of end user kind of inference workflow, right? You kind of described, you know, a process where, and it probably is on both sides between the startup and the traditional ISV, where, hey, we can get mind-numbing tasks done that take forever, very human intensive. I mean, it's kind of an agentic process, right? Where with certain guardrails, it can go kind of through. And I mean, an example, and this is a very old example, but it'll kind of illustrate the point, is I have a coworker who, you know, drafting designer, et cetera, who back in the day, you know, had to go in and manually tag kind of the doors in the drawing and the design, right? And then came a feature that said tag all doors. So it made much easier to go through and do that. But diving into kind of the end user ISV related, you know, from a computational GPU standpoint, Sean, dive into some of those details on what those end users are actually kind of maybe doing, and then specifically like the computational requirements.
This is a great question, and I like the example. Let's break it down into a couple things. So the first thing is computational work versus AI inference, which is prediction. So and by the way, my son is an intern in civil engineering firm, and I see like they have him doing very menial and quite tedious jobs, like the one you're describing, very similar actually, that can be completely automated with AI. So I tell my kid, like, you better learn AI, you know, because these things are going to be eliminated. Like it's fine for an internship, but you don't want to be in that position when you're in your career. So traditionally, like, software applications have to plan for every function that they deliver, including, like, if you wanted to have a tagging feature, you would have to write an algorithm and figure out how you're going to identify these objects computationally, which requires a lot of computer thinking and processing, then how you're going to tag them computationally, which requires a lot of thinking and processing. And by the way, if that can be parallelized, it can be done very well in the GPU, but it's still following an algorithm, which, you know, might have to be updated and rewritten by a software developer as things evolve, and that couldn't possibly predict every variation or permutation that's to come, which is very different than AI, because AI has the ability to learn and also to keep relearning as it works. It can receive feedback from the end user and be updated. So that act of the AI working is called AI inference. So when you type a prompt into ChatGPT, as an example, you're getting AI inference. And basically, the ChatGPT is trying to use tokens, which is the methodology of doing inference in compute terms, to predict your next word. Just the same way in this example that you gave me, the AI would, number one, identify all the doors, and number two, and using a prediction mechanism, like the same way it could identify like fire hydrants. And how does it know to identify fire hydrants? Because you teach it every time you do a CAPTCHA. And that's the kind of like you know, reinforcement learning that I'm talking about, the AI can improve. And then it has to use some sort of prediction for the tagging. What's the right way to tag these things? And that might be based on a RAG, looking up their tagging methodology and the last tag in some sort of a vector database. And I'm sure you've talked about all these things with Selma and other people on my team. So all of that inference work can be done on, can be done very, very quickly in real time, which is the advantage over the traditional computational methodology. And the other advantage is it can evolve and iterate and teach itself, and you could teach it without having to go back and have software developers rewrite the code. You know, we say that AI writes software, and here's a good example. But the interesting phenomenon here is the level of a compute may, in certain cases, be lower than the computational case, particularly when things are massively computationally intensive and require to go out to like an HPC high performance compute queue where you require like roomfuls of servers to do the compute. A lot of people don't have that capability. AI inference offers the same, you know, functionality, but using prediction instead of computation can reduce the compute envelope to your workstation, which is really amazing and is going to completely transform the way Dell Pro Max users get work done and what they can do in a workstation.
Yeah, no, I mean, absolutely. And I'll give this example. My wife will probably hate it, but, you know, in the kind of the prediction, the reinforcement learning, we just, I don't know how we made it, but we just redid the first floor of our house. My wife's been on me for 13 years about it. And we finally ripped the Band-Aid off, you know, we redid the bathroom and all that. But in that example, right, from a reinforcement learning is, we had a very standard door, like normal Home Depot door, right-hand swing, like very easy. So from an AI kind of, and we're not talking the inference piece, we are talking kind of the training piece, but it's very easy to train that, hey, that's a door. And, you know, there's lights around for the outside of the door. It's very easy to train that. But my wife, love her, but she wanted this big custom fancy door, right? Like where we had to tear into the walls and all this kind of stuff. But that is a door, but that is not traditionally like a size of a door. Like we had to have it custom made and all this kind of nonsense. But in that example of reinforcement learning, you know, Sean's son, who is, you know, doing his internship this summer, sees this architectural drawing and he's like, oh, I recognize that's kind of a weird shaped door, but that's a door. Let me tag it. So then the AI learns. And then from that, you've built up this repository of what does a door look like? So AI then will inference locally on the GPU to say, hey, that's a little bit weird of a door. I've never really seen it, but hey, I have an example of that. That's a door. That's a door. That's a door. So that's what kind of the inference piece means. And you don't need a ton of GPU compute, but there are things that you will, and we'll get into that in a second. But let's talk about the next thing, Sean. So we talked about, you said there's a whole host of kind of AEC startups that are focused around AI. Maybe let's start with what kind of problems are they trying to tackle from the ones that you've had a chance to talk to?
Every possible nook and cranny. I like to think of it like the example that I like to use is if you come home from vacation and you come home to a very dry potted plant and you pour water on it, the water is going to go everywhere. It's the same thing with AI. AI is going everywhere and it's filling in the gaps and in like traditional ISV stacks, automating things that are today manual processes. There's startup companies that are working with the traditional ISV applications to help automate certain things. A simple example of that is every software application has an API that allows you to do like custom programming to create features that aren't included with the software, but it's very complicated. It takes skill and knowledge to understand how to use that API. Well, ChatGPT understands languages. One such language could be the APIs of your software application. So startups are creating like chat with my software application. You could say, hey, draw me a really cool custom door that kind of looks like this picture, upload picture, and it'll use the application APIs to do that. But I want to get to one really specific example or area that I love that really gets into the power of agentic is on the construction side. And agentic AI really means taking the human out of the loop. And the ultimate manifestation of that is when you have multiple AIs working together without multiple humans, each AI is focused on the thing that it's really good at. And a great example of that, where like humans would cause problems and slow things down, is in like a safety or security environment on the construction site. And of course, for general contractors, safety is priority number one. The humans that are working there are above all else the important thing. You want to keep them safe. And you could use agentic AI for that. And the way that's happening, and the startups that are doing this basically have cameras all over the construction site that are monitoring everything that's going on. Now, if you could imagine, you have like 30, 40 cameras. Are you going to have 30, 40 humans watching each camera like aircraft controllers? Not at all. You have AIs monitoring the cameras. The AIs have been trained for specific things that happen on a construction site, like accidents and people walking backwards and things swinging into people. One example that I like to use is a crane. So the crane is carrying a load and swinging this way, and a construction worker is like walking backwards this way while they're taking photographs or something like that. And if the trajectory of both continues, there's going to be a collision and the construction worker is going to get hurt. The AI, which understands physics and motion and trajectories, can pick these things up and then agentically, without a human having to sit there or fall asleep or take a lunch break or miss the thing entirely, the AI picks up that, hey, in a minute or 30 seconds, there's going to be a problem. Now, what are the steps I agentically need to take to solve the problem? One would be call the construction worker's mobile phone, call the crane operator's mobile phone, flash something on the crane operator's screen, sound the alarm, call 911, emergency shutdown of the crane. There's multiple steps that the AI can take completely autonomously, each one of which is like, if you think about it, a sub-AI, an AI that calls 911, the right phone number, an AI that calls 911, an AI that shuts down the crane. So all these agents are having a conversation, you know, and escalating appropriately. Another great example of the construction site is using the same kind of cameras plus other photographs from workers plus reality capture data from photogrammetry, LiDAR, etc., to compare the progress of the as-built back to the construction documents and the BIM, and check for clashes and check for to make sure quality is correct, and check to make sure everything is the way it is supposed to be, and check for progress against the construction schedule. You know, this was supposed to be completed. What's the level of completion? AI, independent agentic AIs, AI agents that are, one AI agent understands the schedule, one AI agent can understand what it's looking at and translate that to the CAD or the BIM. Another AI agent could make projections on the scheduling, and another AI agent can adjust the cost. Another AI agent can send alerts to all the subcontractors that there's delays and they should manage accordingly. Think about all the waste, mismanagement, and human error that that kind of agentic process eliminates from the system.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fantastic example. And, you know, one, and for those that fancy themselves kind of learners and someone who wants to educate themselves, go to nvidia.com, and I believe it's blueprint or build.nvidia.com, and look for the blueprint called LM Router. And basically, an LM router is it's a very basic version of what Sean's describing, but it'll give you the ideas that I think people have the I would say misconception that AI can do everything, and it's not. AI can't do everything. AI has to be trained how to do certain tasks. It's kind of like for example, with my daughter, she's not very good at cleaning her room. We had to show her how to clean her room. Now she's good at it, but she had to be trained on that. But just because she can clean her room doesn't necessarily mean that she knows how to go cook with a sharp knife and make spaghetti, right? That's an independent task. So kind of what everything Sean's describing is it has to be trained on each kind of those individual steps. And LM Router is a boiled down version that can run on a Dell Pro Max with NVIDIA RTX GPU, but it can show you that exact task where it's image, text, logical reasoning. It'll route that task to the right kind of, or the route the inference to the right model, whether it's vision or whatever, and give you the right result, which is basically an agentic or multimodal system. And, you know, it's funny that you mentioned kind of the construction safety example. My dad, I won't name the name of the company, but he's retired now, but he still knows a lot of guys. And recently he was telling me about that. It's not construction. Let's just say, anyways, they have to wear hard hats, and they get in big trouble when they don't wear their hard hats, because you got to wear a hard hat. And the company, you know, created kind of exactly what you described it, not quite multimodal agentic, but we'll look and we'll find examples with computer vision of people not wearing their hard hats. And then they will get a warning kind of in their union file, right? If they're not wearing their hard hat. But that is just a very interesting way of how, instead of having someone, a safety officer, walk around, you can use AI to ensure kind of the safety of your workforce. So I love that example. So you brought up a good question, Sean. I want to ask, because I've seen it kind of diverge in two ways in the market. And I'm curious how AEC kind of, which angle it's taking, right? Is that, you know, with kind of the onslaught of AI, see a lot of companies across many different verticals kind of create their own software, right? And some are going to be very successful, but at the end of the day, customers don't necessarily want to add another software, another application. What I've seen, especially in M&E, is the integration of some of these processes and tools and IP into, for example, you know, one of my partners, Bloomin' AI, like the adoption or the integration of their application within side of Creative Cloud. Like within AEC, have you seen more of the standalone creation of new, you know, AI applications and workflows? Or are you starting to see more of a convergence of those into, be it maybe an API, into the traditional ISVs?
I see three things. I see one, as I previously described, tons of startups doing every possible thing you can imagine. And it's great. I mean, you can't ask for something better in terms of using technology to improve productivity, because you've got like this entrepreneurial spirit from people who are in the industry, who have experienced frustrations on a day-to-day basis, now see AI as a tool that can be harnessed to solve these problems. They move very, very quickly because they have one specific problem to solve, and they don't, unlike ISVs, have legacy code bases that they need to manage. The traditional ISV applications have lots of users and millions of lines of code and a schedule of things they need to fix and improve and new features they need to add that they've been promising customers for years. And it's very difficult for them just to, like, you know, throw something. They can't just throw things in. Very difficult for them to experiment. So what's likely going to happen is you're going to see some of these startups get acquired by the traditional ISVs. You're going to see innovation from the ISVs and inclusion of new AI-based functionality in their traditional software applications. And you're going to see ISVs creating and launching new software applications and services that leverage AI. But the other variable here that we're seeing is the companies themselves, the customers, now developing their own AI software development and AI development capabilities. And this is really interesting and never really seen. We've seen a little bit with computational design, like Grasshopper scripting in Rhino and that kind of thing. But that was, you know, very localized and limited to a number of firms. But here we're seeing a lot of firms for tons of different use cases, including things that have nothing to do with the design process, just like reading and responding to RFPs or managing HR or doing costing and scheduling, like pure like LLM based things that have nothing to do with design. We're seeing AI use cases across the board, across all the firms in AEC&O. And so the other really important element about the reasons why companies want to build their own AI is because AI training needs data to train on. And all of that data resides on their hard drives. And most of that data is what they would consider proprietary. They don't want to train on somebody else's data. They don't want to train on generic data because that data doesn't reflect the way they do things, the way they do their scheduling, the way they do their costing, the way they do their design, the way they manage their construction, whatever it is that, you know, they have 100 years of experience doing things a special way that's got them to this point. What if they can train an AI based on that data to automate certain elements of their workload? They need to understand AI and AI software development in order to do that. And then the question is, well, how do you do that and integrate that capability with the software coming from these startups and from the ISVs? For example, you get some models from the ISVs or startups and you want to do what's called fine tuning with your own data. You have to either have a process that's defined by the software vendor or you develop your own process. I think see a lot of both of those things happening. For companies that want to get into AI software development or fine tuning, note that the computational requirements are quite different than inference. Just like the people are quite different. Inference, you have architects, engineers, VDC managers, etc., using traditional software that's powered by AI, and that's called inference, using traditional workstations with GPUs that are going to be doing more things with AI. You need better GPUs. You need better everything, frankly, better GPU, better CPU, more memory, more storage, because more is going to be happening on the workstation. But it's more of the same type of architecture that you have today with RTX, et cetera. Over on the AI development side, it's completely different. And you've probably talked about this with Sama, that you now need specialized hardware and lots of it to do training. Like, for example, the Dell Pro Max with GB10, which is Grace Blackwell supercomputer that is available in a very small form factor, but scales up all the way to data center with lots of GPUs for doing complex AI training. And this is the path that our companies are headed into, our AEC companies, but there's these two paths, you know, and they don't share the same workstations architecture, and our customers need to understand this.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a great point. I mean, think of, so inference, training, fine tuning, right? Like, I kind of think you have inference, you have fine tuning, you have full on skill training. Like inference, think about consuming, right? Whether it's a ChatGPT or automated tagging all the doors, you're not writing the model, you're just consuming the intelligence out of the model, right? Then you have fine tuning, where you're taking kind of a model and you're adding kind of your own data. That can absolutely happen on a workstation, a little bit slow, right? But I mean, you could run that on a 96 gig Blackwell RTX Pro.
On four of them.
Or on four of them, if you want to run it faster, exactly. But if you're doing, exactly. And then what you said, when you're full on training, you're talking data center, very, very heavy compute. So we've talked about AEC, we've talked about geospatial, but let's kind of take just a bit of a different twist. So if you haven't heard, which I think most have heard the term kind of digital twin, you know, something that's through Omniverse, which was recreated kind of a replicative world in 3D of an actual physical space. How does digital twin fit into AEC or Omniverse currently?
Yeah, digital twins are required to have an understanding of what's going to happen in our universe, in the physical world, but to have that understanding in a digital form before any concrete is poured. And the types of digital twins that NVIDIA is getting involved with account for every variable. All those variables are grounded in the laws of physics. What you see, like going back to sketching, orthographic and perspective sketching, we're trying to show what this thing is going to look like being the key term in the physical world. But that doesn't do justice to the way the thing is actually going to work in the physical world, because it doesn't factor physics into the equation. It doesn't factor in the way the environment is going to interact with the built thing, whether that's water or wind or vibrations from the earth, like earthquakes, and the way people are going to use the building or the asset, the way it's going to degrade over time and how to manage maintenance, et cetera, to manage that asset. The different ways that it can be used, like if you're in a hospital, there's optimal design scenarios that you need to factor in the full physics of the deployment, the way that the building or the asset is going to be used with everything, people, processes, electricity, lighting, everything factored in. And then you want to design to an optimal outcome. Normally what happens is the design process is you design something on paper, the architect or whatever designs it, sends it over to the engineer. The engineer runs some standard calculations on it, like just what they need to do to get it signed off. And then they send it over to, probably the engineer says, you need to change this thing. It can't, that thing, you know, won't work. It's those trusses aren't going to support the load. So go back and redesign it. And then you resimulate. And then over to the construction team, have to figure out how to build. Well, what if you kind of, you know, had all that information in one place where, like, here's all the design, the engineering, the construction data. Let's start simulating different scenarios. Let's factor in absolutely everything and get the math results in terms of how efficient our design is. Does it return the KPIs we're looking for in terms of energy consumption, in terms of lighting in certain places, in terms of the way people use the space, in terms of if it's processes like oil and gas, in terms of how efficient it is in terms of production of that product. All of this can be done in the digital twin, and it's not today. So there's tons of opportunity ahead of us.
Yeah. I mean, if you watch Jensen's keynote, didn't speak necessarily directly. I mean, definitely about digital twins, but really physical AI, right? It's like, how does the physical work, like you said, how does it introduce itself into like the AI and the 3D aspect of it, right? Whether mapping a street for 3D car to know how people walk out of the street, to know where the car should drive, all of that type of stuff. So it's definitely on the front wave. It's very, very exciting. And some of the stuff I've seen is super cool. So I know we're getting up close to the end, Sean. Couple of rapid fire questions for you that I think the audience will definitely want to know is, you know, what is a future looking use case in AEC that you think is on the horizon in the next 2 years?
Well, I think what's happening now is, first of all, there's a recognition of this value of the digital twin, especially for large scale assets like airports and stadiums, entire cities. And how the things that I talked about in terms of the value of having all this information digitally before any concrete is poured, but also because AI is now going to be part of the building operations solutions, you need, as you say, to have a digital twin to train the AI. Because an AI needs training data. If you're building a building that doesn't exist, how are you going to train an AI? Nothing exists to train it. So you have to create this synthetic version, this digital version of the building. It has to behave as it will in the real world with physics. And then you could train an AI based on that data. So we're starting to see this convergence of AI and digital twins. And a great manifestation of this that I love is the idea of robots on the construction site, because robots are basically AI. To have an efficient robot, you want the robot to be autonomous, but it has to know what it's doing. And to know what it's doing, it needs to be trained. And to be trained, it needs training data. And that training data is going to come from some sort of construction digital twin. Ideally, the digital twin of the actual thing that the robot is building, the specific bridge, the specific building, so it can anticipate every and go through and plan in a digital world everything that needs to be done. When it goes to the site, it doesn't make a mistake.
I love that. So, you know, Sean, this has been a great conversation, like learning about kind of AI from, you know, the traditional kind of AEC workflows to the introduction of AI and how they're kind of morphing the industry, and also talking about digital twins. So, you know, as we wrap up, give the audience, you know, 1 or 2 minutes just to your kind of final thoughts and takeaways, and then we'll go ahead and wrap up the episode.
Yeah, well, one final thought that we didn't talk about is coming up next week, Dell and NVIDIA are going to be together at the S3 User Conference, which is S3's the largest geospatial software company. And we're going to be talking about how AI is powering future workloads today inside of S3 ArcGIS based on Dell Pro Max with multiple GPUs. And this is doing exactly what we've been talking about this whole session in the context of geospatial. You can imagine how many satellites are flying today thanks to like SpaceX's ability to inexpensively launch satellites. These satellites are monitoring our Earth for all sorts of things. There's tons of data coming down. What human is scanning and analyzing all of this data? It's far too much. So ArcGIS Pro from S3 makes it possible to use AI to get insights from this data, which is ultimately what you want. Show me the erosion, find me this lost hiker, whatever it is. And all of that can be done using AI on Dell Pro Max with NVIDIA GPUs, and we'll be out there next week talking about how to do it.
Amazing. Well, thank you, Sean. Really appreciate the time. So if you haven't, definitely check out the Reshaping Workflows page on Dell.com, and definitely check out LM Router on NVIDIA or build.nvidia.com. So with that being said, this is Logan with Reshaping Workflows, powered by Dell Pro Max and NVIDIA RTX GPUs. Until next time, keep your AI running locally on Dell Pro Max and NVIDIA RTX GPUs. With that, have a great night.
This podcast was produced in partnership with Amaze Media Lab.